The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 22nd of October, 2020. On the podcast today, Duncan Payton, Chief Executive Officer of 4D Pharma. That's DDDD ticker. Easy to remember that. Explain the reasons behind their merger and intention to seek a NASDAQ listing. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers news from the following companies. GSK, in fact, we just talked about GSK because it's just dropped quite a bit recently. Unilever, International Consolidated Airlines, and Ralks. Also, at the end of the podcast, I'll be highlighting two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see our COVID-19 index and lots of other content. Check it out. In fact, what's the biggest riser today is 4D Pharma. And of course, they're on the podcast today, up 16% to 108. And the biggest faller is Gene Drive, down 8% to 104. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Duncan Payton, Chief Executive Officer of 4D Pharma. DDDD is ticker, easy to remember. Duncan, thanks for joining me.
No problems. Good to talk.
Yeah, well, listen, I've seen a lot of interest from private investors around 4D Pharma on social media, so it's nice to get you on and hear the story from the horse's mouth, so to speak. So before we get into the big news today, which you announced intention to merge with Longevity Acquisition Corporation, basically, and you'll now be listed on the NASDAQ coming up, before we get into that and why you're doing that, just give us a brief overview as to 4D Pharma, please.
Yeah, look, you know, no problem. So 4D Pharma is a world leader in a new class of therapeutics called live biotherapeutics. So rather than a traditional drug like a chemical or a protein or a biologic, we use bacteria. And we use bacteria that we understand exactly like a traditional pharma company that have a very defined effect. So uniquely in this space, 4D Pharma understands how these diseases can, how these bacteria, sorry, can impact the disease pathway. Mm-hmm. And within that, and you know, a particular interest is how these bacteria work with the gut and have a significant impact on our immune systems, which is obviously important, you know, and how we fight disease. And because of this, not only can we address diseases associated with the gut, so we've got programs in IBS, and we've just released some data on that, but also major diseases, you know, which are, you know, really significant markets, but also huge global issues for clinicians and patients, such as cancer, neurodegeneration, but also things like respiratory disease, where we're looking at asthma and COVID. And interestingly, what really got me excited about this space and what drove us to set up 4D Pharma is these bacteria that we've got are isolated from healthy humans, and we understand how they work and how they impact the immune system. Mm-hmm. But importantly, and unlike traditional drugs, and I'm sure you've had friends or family who've been on a drug regime and actually have had some quite serious side effects, these drugs, these live biotherapeutics, and in particular the live biotherapeutics that 4D Pharma develop, have a fantastic safety profile.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, we are a drug company. Mm-hmm. We are using bacteria, we're using live biotherapeutics, a new class of therapeutics, which are, you know, from all the data that we're seeing, are pushing us towards developing, you know, effective drugs, but also safe drugs.
Yeah, yeah. And what areas are you in, you know, of medicine and pharma?
That's a really good question. 4D Pharma, we are, you know, we're based in science, and we're pushing the boundaries of science forward. And we've got many papers in terms of how these bacteria work and looking at mechanisms of action. And when we started out, we started looking at the gut because you know, that's where your bacteria resides. So we're looking at diseases like Crohn's and colitis. But it was that point we started to understand more about how these bacteria impact the immune system. And that made us start to look at diseases like, you know, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, the diseases which are really impacted by the immune system, but also cancer. And more recently, we've started to do a lot of work in the gut-brain axis. So we're looking at neurodegeneration, and we think that's a really interesting area that we'll develop into next. So the company's based around a platform which we call MicroRx. So we're a platform-based business, and we're able to address a whole host of disease areas.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and it's a very interesting space, like you say, cutting edge. And today, a big announcement. You intend to merge with Longevity, and they'll give you access, obviously, to NASDAQ and the US market. So why are you doing First of all, explain the deal and why you're doing this, if you could, Duncan.
Yeah, you know, as you write, we announced more about our pathway to NASDAQ. Today is the first step on that pathway. We talked about our desire and to access the US markets. And today we announced we'll merge with a SPAC, which is a special purpose acquisition company. And these SPACs are becoming increasingly popular, particularly in the US, as a way to access the US markets and access them quickly and efficiently. And what we liked about this this process and this approach was the ability that, unlike a traditional IPO process, this guarantees the funding that we're going to get at the end of it, or a minimum guarantee of the funding at the end of it, because they're underwritten. Mm-hmm. So today we announced the merger with the SPAC. We're just finishing going through our US auditing process, and after that we will begin the filing process with the SEC throughout November. And then, you know, if everything goes to plan, we'll be listed on NASDAQ in mid-January.
Yeah, yeah. And essentially, you know, what's the reasons for this then?
The reason for this is simply the biotech market in the US is particularly strong. It gives us access to more US capital. And I think it also will improve the value that we generate for shareholders as well by accessing these capital markets.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you see, it's unbelievable. It's the peer valuation sometimes of companies, you know, out there compared to over here. They're very, you know, more highly rated, more valued highly out there, aren't they?
Yeah, and, you know, there are some people out there who are in the microbiome space. You know, we are the world leader. We have far more patents, far more clinical programs than those our peers that which are listed on NASDAQ. You know, they're valued at $2 billion and we're not. And, you know, we firmly believe from our clinical data that we're already generating, from our partnerships that we're generating, you know, we are by far the world leader in this space. So, you know, we hope we'll see the appreciation of what we've done on the US markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and apart from, you know, this big bit of news today, what other bits or milestones or news coming out can private investors expect then, Duncan?
Yeah, so more recently we had some data in our Blautix program, which is our IBS program, so that's irritable bowel syndrome, which for the first time provides a drug which potentially addresses both IBS-C and IBS-D, and, you know, and we believe could potentially be the safe first line of therapy for a disease which really clinicians and patients struggle with. We're doing more analysis on that data, and, you know, hopefully throughout the next quarter we'll release some more analysis on that data and a little bit more information about the subgroup analysis which we're currently doing. So we've got that coming up. Last week, I think we announced we have more papers at the SITC Cancer Conference, which is a large and prestigious international oncology conference. And this covers our drug MRX-0518 in our oncology programs. And these papers cover the work that we are doing with MRX-518 and Keytruda. And Keytruda is a fantastic drug from Merck. And the results that we've got out of that have been significant. You know, groundbreaking, and it was the first proof of concept for Alive Biotherapeutic in the oncology space. Mm-hmm. We've reported on it before. We'll talk about that. But I think, you know, more importantly, we'll be discussing another trial that we're doing with MRX0518 on its own. So not in combination with a checkpoint inhibitor. This is just MRX518 on its own, and we'll also report that data out at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Okay. Well, Duncan, every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets. To get on that list, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So right now, to encourage people to add you to their watch list, please give us three quick reasons why they should add 4D Pharma to their watch list, please.
Great question. So we continue to lead the field in live biotherapeutics. And, you know, this could lead to, you know, safe and effective treatments, you know, almost a perfect drug for the issues that we face in, you know, challenging fields like oncology, you know, and like neurodegeneration. And, you know, we, with what we announced today, we're well funded, and, you know, we've got a defined path to NASDAQ and a defined timeline to access capital markets and really see some appreciation and share value. And frankly, I don't know of a more exciting company.
Excellent stuff. Duncan, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Hope so. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Very well, thanks, very well. Bit wet and windy here, but there you go. Guess we're in autumn now, aren't we? Down to Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, you know, it's going to be a very interesting Christmas for a lot, I think. But I'm hoping, you know, that sentiment will change a bit. I hope these lockdowns will help the infection rate go down. And then I think, you know, it's like anything. There's a bit of fear. When the fear's there, that's the time to start buying, I think, because then, you know, we've had lots of fear-driven news of late. And I think if you think about it, it's going to get better because we've got vaccines approaching and readouts from quite a few companies now coming up. And Moderna just said they're going to have a vaccine by December. I know Pfizer heading for November. We've got, you know, we're knowing more about the disease. We've got therapeutics there. So I think it'll generally get a bit better than news. We've had the worst bit of news. In fact, you know what I was going to say? I was going to ask you, I've set some little chart alerts up and I've largely taken quite a few of them off because they used to pop up every day. Pretty much, and but I still held them on some big stocks. And GSK just popped up. It's like that is now the share price of GSK has just gone down to where it was in the DAS for cash, the March sell off when the big fear was in the market. But I'm thinking, I looked through the news, I couldn't see anything out today, or and I thought, what's going on there then? Any idea why it's selling off or what?
That surprises me at a certain level as well. I think the trouble with GSK is number one, it's obviously widely held, and number two, hence, you know, the lack of a marginal buyer, maybe. Number two, AstraZeneca, which is the big sort of other pharma play in the UK market, is obviously has done somewhat better in their drug pipeline or new drug pipeline, but is also very much wedded to COVID treatments. You know, we hear all the time about the Oxford Zeneca study, whilst GSK is much more tier two, tier three player. So there's not that immediate kind of COVID, oh my goodness, everyone's excited. So a lot of people own it. It's kind of a classic consumer play, and hence anything which is a little bit more associated with a consumer, even if it is consumer health, you know, there might be a little bit of down trading, or, you know, you've had your stock building back in March or something, and it gets a bit more difficult. I think it's a bit of a patchy pipeline, drug pipeline there. Plus, you know, they haven't been shy of doing deals, and it seems likely that they'll do more. Now, what that means in terms of dilution, cost, what the future profile of the dividend, you know, they've been quite acquisitive, you know, did a JV with Pfizer and other stuff. So, you know, things are going on, and maybe the story's not, you know, there are alternatives out there. But I tell you what it does do, it helps explain something, which is, as another big constituent of the FTSE 100, if people are looking at the UK leading large cap market and thinking, surely it can't be just the energy stocks pushing this down, because, you know, the weightings will go down as the share prices go down, you know, stuff like Glaxo having a little bit of a relative shocker is another indicator as to why that is.
Yeah. But you know what? I always like to put some big alerts whenever a company hits a sort of what it's called RSI, this relative strength in the chart. It goes below 30, which means oversold. It doesn't mean that there's time to buy there because you need to wait for it to tick up because a company can be oversold for a long time. It keep going a lot lower. But I always like to see when something hits that because it doesn't do it very often, you know? And so it's very interesting, the weakness here in the share price. Anyway, so any news out today, Chris? What are we starting with?
Yeah, loads of news. Actually, it's a Thursday, you know, lots of people coming out. And actually, just to pick up something you said a couple of minutes ago, you know, the general tone is, I reckon, an important word is mitigation, in the sense that companies are finding ways around stuff. You know, most companies, even those with a bit of an industrial bent or whatever, are talking about an improvement in the third quarter. If they're talking about, let's say, sales or profits up to the end of September, unsurprisingly, versus the lockdown period. So, you know, I would agree. I think there are things to be doing and things to be looking for. It's clearly not an easy backdrop, but it's sort of one which companies are saying, right, we've got to crack on and find our route through this. And fingers crossed, vaccines and treatments and whatever else, we'll have to see on those. But let's face it, as we're all still kicking around the human race, we're pretty good at finding solutions to challenges, at least that's what the history books say. I've got to start with Unilever, really. I think Unilever is the one to look at first. And again, you know, a bit like Glaxo, huge index play, and obviously a big consumer staple. And if you look at their brands and products, you know, it's unsurprisingly a sort of a go-to type brand, a go-to type product list, which people like. Their latest quarterly numbers, you know, they're kind of interesting. They talk about headline sales up over 4%, and actually that's both at a volume level and at a price level. So both those aspects are positive, i.e. they're not only selling more volume of stuff, but they're also getting higher prices on average. But if you actually look at the reported revenues, and this is the other interesting aspect, they're actually slightly down because there's a massive foreign exchange hit. And obviously that's because, you know, you had some wild and wacky things going on in the foreign exchange markets, particularly in places like some of the emerging markets and related. And as Unilever brings those profits back to the pounds and euros, that has an impact. So, you know, that's quite interesting as well. That they, if you dig into it a bit further, you then suddenly realise why some of these bigger companies, they are survivors at these times. Because when they can sort of pull things out like, oh, by the way, you know, Domestos is one of their brands. So, you know, Domestos you'd expect to sell quite well in a healthcare pandemic. You know, people want to bleach stuff and relate it a bit more. When they just chuck in casual observations like, oh, yeah, we launched Domestos in China. You know, you think to yourself, crikey, you know, that's the power of, you know, a company like Unilever pushing out over the emerging markets and whatever. Yeah. But generally, if you look at, you know, the Ben and Jerry's, the comments about things like Hellmann's, where they had a bit of innovation there, and related Dove, obviously in soap and sort of shower stuff and whatever, it's all sort of reasonable. Positive stuff. The trouble is, it is so well known. And it's interesting, I was looking at Procter & Gamble shares, very similar company. They came out with their numbers earlier this week in the States, and it's exactly the same. These companies are trading on mid-20 times price-earnings ratios. You're getting, dividend yields, which are well covered, and you'd expect them to progress over time of 3% or something. But the reality is, you know, you're paying a big old price for it. Unilever shares, when I last looked, were kind of shrugging the shoulders today, which I guess is all right, given the market's down. But, you know, it indicates the fact that even but pretty barnstorming progress and numbers, it's not enough to drive this one on further. You know, there's a big old resistance point, I think, at about 50 quid a share. It's a good company, but unfortunately well-loved and well-priced in my opinion.
Yeah. And like everything, really, you've got to wait for a bit of weakness. Sometimes shares just sell off, like the Glaxo. We don't know why that sold off. You know, when that starts happening, I think it's a good time to start doing some research when the shares got them down. And look at the brands there of Unilever. They've got quite a lot there. I didn't realize they were, like I said, you mentioned Ben & Jerry's, but Bovril, Brut, Brill Cream, Carte d'Or, Cif, Coleman's, Cornetto, Domestos, Dove. That's only on page one. Hellmann's, Lipton. They've got, what are they surprised by? It'll be Marmite, Lynx, Magnum, Personal PG, Pot Noodle. Go. They've got Surf, everything there.
I know.
Vaseline.
That's right. I mean,
walls,
just think about. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? No, I quite concur. And obviously, what the plan is, and you can see it in the numbers, they are pushing out progressively over the emerging markets because that's what you'd expect. Mm-hmm. And you can think about sort of the project JVs they could have at a product level. Things like, we await the Marmite ice cream or the Ben and Jerry's special Domestos or something. They could have all sorts of fun. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, a very impressive company. But it's just very priced in. I completely concur. You know, even though shares, in some senses, it's simple. It's buy low, sell high. We all know it's much more complicated than that. And clearly, sometimes shares are low because, frankly, they're rubbish businesses. Mm. And that always is an important filter. But, you know, the old saying of price is what you pay and value is what you get is important. And you're absolutely right. If you had to choose between Glaxo and Unilever today, what's the one to be spending a bit of time at looking at?
Yeah,
it's pretty clear. It's Glaxo. It's not Unilever.
Because I mean, you're right. Unilever's share price is like towards the top end of the range, and it's rolling over. In fact, it didn't get to the last previous top end. It just broke 52 quid in September 2019, but now it's rolling over at, like, say, 50 quid. It didn't quite make it, and it's looking at a bit of weakness there. So it's mid-range, and you think, it's always dangerous in the mid-range, isn't it? You think, where could it go? Could it go down as well as up? You don't know. So you're right. Yeah, it's a price thing, not a bargain, maybe. Cool. So that's ULVR. What's next, Chris? Anything else?
Next one has to be IAG, which is the company formerly known as British Airways.
Yeah.
They did change the name because I do appreciate they basically merged British Airways with Iberia and various other brands, Aer Lingus and whatever else. And so now it's some international consolidated, whatever it is, airlines.
Yeah, why do they bother with consolidating? Why do they make it just keep it simple, like international airlines? What, just do that.
I know. But, you know, there's probably people paid millions to kind of work out the optimal names for search engines or something. Who knows? Anyhow, IAG, they were due to pucker up their numbers at the end of October, but they've gone a bit early, which is often a sort of a, what have they found sign. And there's a little bit of that in today's update. They basically said, look, conditions are tough. Yeah, you know, kill surprise, we all know that. But actually tough enough for them to say they're not going to be able to hit some of the targets they talked about in the summer, when obviously they knew already conditions were very tough. So they're not going to be cash flow break even at the end in the fourth quarter of this year. And effectively their sort of capacity utilization is going to be a bit lower versus the same time last year. So in other words, things are tough, as you would expect, given, as we talked about already, a few more restrictions, you know, obviously COVID second waves and everything else. But it's kind of interesting because they also give an update on liquidity. And yeah, they lost money in quarter three. I think it was a little bit over €1 billion, which obviously is a large sum of money. But they said after the money raising, which they completed a few weeks ago, they've got €9 billion of liquidity, which is not exactly shabby. And even though it's often dangerous to sort of try and equate the cash burn in the last quarter with how much liquidity you've got, my reading of it is that they still have basically a year's plus of money, even current, you know, very muted travel and restrictions and other issues which were impairing their business. So actually, I looked at it and the shares initially went down like 5%. And I see they're sort of quietly just creeping back when I last looked, to be down not quite as much on the day. And actually, I think that's about right. That actually, even though headline-wise it looked a bit shabby, you could actually say liquidity is not too terrible here. They are a survivor, I think. And if you have certainly a positive view towards, you know, vaccine progress and related, guess what? This one is a mega geared play on better times for travel and leisure stocks, which clearly, unsurprisingly, are absolutely out of favour.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm actually warming up to IAG. I don't own the shares, but I actually think that a pound a share, mm-hmm. of which the shares dip below today, is actually a pretty big line in the sand. And that is a very good view as to people's sentiment towards the space. So I would be actually on the watch for this one. And certainly if you're do you an opinion that we are in a deer of negative sentiment towards travel and leisure and related stuff? IAG, with its landing slots and everything else, and obviously liquidity is talked about, is a geared play on that. And it's the sort of thing which, with a tailwind, suddenly go from £1 to £2 or something like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Do you know what? I think right now, I think news will start to become more positive, just because it's like shares, it's charts. Once you've been sort of low for a while, it has to bounce back, because we've had, you know, I think infections will drop because of the media fear fest and the local lockdowns happening. We know more about the virus. We know who it affects adversely, so it's not wave one. We get more, you know, accurate, faster testing coming around. That'll happen. Lots of pharma companies will be releasing news on vaccines. And so I think we'll see the light at the end of the tunnel. I think we may see a decent, obviously get past the election in the US, a decent Santa rally if we get some good news out from these pharma companies on vaccines, which it looks like, you know, preliminary reports are suggesting that safety is okay, efficacy is good. So I think we could, you know, I could take your positions now, I think, you know, on some of these stocks.
Yeah, no, I think the key is you need something where you've got liquidity, the company's got a bit of time, you're not pushing up against balance sheet issues and covenants and whatever else. So for me, when I look at companies that have either raised money or got themselves in a better position or inherently because of the business are in an all right position. So, you know, when I'm thinking about travel and leisure, I'm thinking, you know, EasyJet raised a bit of money, IAG, as aforementioned. Something like a Whitbread, who also raise money and have a strong franchise with Premier Inn. These are the sort of names where actually you've got a bit of protection. It's not a complete flip the coin. They are businesses with a bit of longevity to them and a bit of relative defensiveness, but also, unsurprisingly and inevitably, gearing towards an improved sentiment. And something like an airline, EasyJet sub £5, IAG sub £1, they kind of feel opportunistic to me. So I'd be, in the first of my portfolio, yeah, I would be having some exposure to this space.
Cool. Anything else, Chris?
Well, final quick one on slightly weirdly named company, but Relks, I think it used to be called Reed Elsevier, but now it got all trendy and shortened its name and added an X to it for the hell of it. So Relks is actually a FTSE 100 company, not that many people would know that. And actually, two interesting things from today's little update. Number one is they actually have cornered the market pretty much in a lot of these technical, academic and legal publications. But those things roll on. You know, there's a lot of repeat business going on there, and that's all, you know, tick the box, you know, thumbs up, still kind of progressing okay, judging by the update today, as you would expect. The thing which has been about sort of 15-20% of their business has been exhibitions, and I'm sure many people have been to a Reed or Elsevier exhibition or something around that. And obviously exhibitions completely stopped 6-8 months ago. They're talking today that a few have restarted, and you know, a little bit of that's geography. You know, we obviously see that certain different things are happening in China and stuff like that, in quotes, normal business conditions or related. And obviously there are some other options, virtual conferences and stuff like that people can try to monetize. But what struck me is that actually they held expectations. I like the recurring nature of the sort of the scientific, technical and academic that rolls on. And actually, if you look actually for quite a long time, it was quite an interesting one. There's been a lot of historic support. It was an old resistance, then it became a new support. We're now sort of, because the market's been grinding a little bit lower in recent weeks, that has sort of pushed that one down a little bit more towards those sorts of levels. So this is one I think on a bad day to think about. You know, recurring revenues, you know, impregnable position in many technical and legal and academic areas, and a little cherry on top would be obviously exhibitions. You've got that little bit of gearing to some element of resumption of normal activities, which could come in you know, over the next year or three or something. So quite interesting, weird name, interesting business. Anything in that sort of 15-16 quid area, I'd be having a few. So one for the watch list.
Yeah. God, do you know what? I mean, Reed Elsevier I've heard of course, but Relks now, R-E-L is ticker. I've never heard of that. And you look at it, it's like, what, 30 billion plus company. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know? This is it. Yeah. So, you know, we already talked about IAG and bonkers renaming and whatever. But Relks, I mean, honestly, I don't know how many millions were paid out for that name, but if that's obviously the business to be in, if somebody generally, I should really look it up, if actually somebody got paid to rebrand it like that, because, you know, you get what they're trying to do. It's Reed Elsevier, but it should, rather than it being Reel or something. They put the X on to make it a bit more 21st century trendy or something. But yeah, crazy.
I think that's a bit passé. I think that's a bit.
The name of the company.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a bit passé now. That the X on the end. It's a bit cheap. It's a bit novelty. You know, it's like let's put an X on it. It seems a bit cutting edge, and it's not. It's a bit old now. So it'd be nice to stand at the AGM or something and say, excuse me, do you mind me asking how much you spent for someone to change your name to this ridiculous? Because that is one bad decision, and I'm worried that if that's just the start of the bad decisions, I'm going to sell my shares. So, marvellous, Chris. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week. All right?
Sounds fun. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Novasight, up 12% to 1103. Wow, flying. Of course, Vadim was on the podcast yesterday talking about it. At four, Ferro Alloy Resources, up 4% to 1095. At three, Alien Metals, down 14% to 1.7. At two, 4D Pharma, up 16.4% to 108.5. And at one, Vela Technologies, down 12% to 0.095. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, is OPG Power Ventures final results. At four, KEFI Gold and Copper conditional consortium completion for Tulikapi. At three, Tuple PLC new contract win. At two, confirmation of copper concentrate production at Byte Supply. That's for Vast Resources. And at one, it's 4D Pharma. I spoke to Duncan on the podcast today. Proposed merger and intention to seek NASDAQ listing. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.